powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're joined now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline by Mariners reliever Anthony Misevich. Anthony, first of all, how are you? Happy opening day.
Good. Thanks for having me, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Now, Anthony, I don't want to start out hostile. But I did go to a school in the Pac-12, and I got to know, do you hate UCLA hoops because they knocked out Michigan State, your alma mater, or do you love them for beating Michigan most recently?
It's actually kind of a love-hate. I was kind of upset when they beat us, but when they beat Michigan, it was like, oh, at least they're going to go to the Final Four and kind of do their thing. So they're playing good basketball. You can't hate them for that. So
That's not true at all.
I'm happy for those guys.
Anthony, we've kind of been talking through, you know, what our favorite aspects of opening day is, just from a fan perspective. What is it like for you as a player?
It's kind of nervous. You know, you're kind of getting out of spring training, getting ready for the regular season. You kind of just have these nerves going. You know, you just want to get to the ballpark and start the introductions and get the game going. So it's kind of a build-up. You know, you build up for the whole off season, all of spring training, just to get to this point. And it feels like today is just taking forever, you know. It felt like it's forever to get to this interview. So it's exciting, man. I can't wait to get out there and have the introductions. And once those lights start up, hopefully get a W and have a good game out there.
You know, the good thing is you're kind of being, like, you know, marked up to it. Like, you made your debut last year, and I can only imagine the nerves, you know, being out there anyway in a major league park, but no fans in the stands. This year we've got 9,000 to start out with. It's like we're kind of easing into a bunch of people. You know what I mean? Like, pretty soon you're going to be able to be like, what nerves? I have no nerves. I'm ice cold out there.
I think it's a good build-up. Yeah, you're right. 9,000, hopefully you get a little more in there as you know, the home stands progress. But I think it's a good start, you know, other than some cardboard cutouts in the stands.
Now, Anthony, what was that like? I mean, for you as a player, I mean, we all talk about it from our experience and not being able to go to the park and how much we missed it. But for you as a player, not being able to go into a stadium filled with fans, you know, hear the roars and the cheers and the boos and, you know, whatever, you know, comes your way being in different parks. What was that like for you?
You still get the nerves and you get excited to play. At one point, I honestly thought the cardboard cutouts were real, you know, when you have those big high intensity situations, you know, they think they're cheering, you think they're moving, but it was still as much fun as I could have had in my whole entire life, you know. It was still the big leagues, and it was still, we were able to play without having any, you know, issues with COVID for our side. But this year is going to be a little more exciting. You know, we'll actually hear some fans. It was good to hear them in spring training, you know, kind of get fired up there. So I think we're all ready to have some fans and kind of play behind some people. So
is that one of your, I mean, because obviously before you were a player, you were a baseball fan, I would imagine. I mean, what are some kind of memories and moments you have tied to opening night when you're on that side of it?
I remember going with my parents super young. I had to be like 7 or 8 years old and just going to, you know, Tiger Stadium back when it was still open. And it was just like the craziest thing, you know, seeing those baseball players make a living just with a full stadium of fans. And now having to do it is, it's almost surreal. So
Do you remember the first major league player that you ever, like when you were a kid, you went up and asked for an autograph?
I think it was Bobby. It had to be Bobby Higginson because we had like three of his jerseys and my old man loved him just for some reason. So I think it was Bobby Higginson on his jersey, ironically. So,
Anthony, what is going to be your mindset? What is your mindset every time you take the mound? Has it changed over the years? Has it always been the same since you were, you know, in high school, in college? What has that process been like for you?
I think moving to the bullpen, it's been more of an attack attitude. I want to have the quickest inning, the cleanest inning I possibly can. You know, fill up the zone with a lot of strikes, a lot of off speed. And just put the hitters away quickly. You know, I want the defense to stay on their toes and not play back on their heels as much. So I think my mindset has changed going to the bullpen, especially at this level, you know, the highest level. So it has to be intense and it has to be with a lot of intent out there. So I just take a bulldog mentality and just, I want to attack these hitters and put them down as fast as I can.
No, I love it. I love hearing that, Anthony. Now, one of the things that this fan base is anxious to see is, you know, this organization has been through a rebuilding process, a teardown, if you will, over the past couple of years. And now it feels like this team is really, you know, ready to kind of take off and excited to see what this group can be. What has it been within the clubhouse and the conversations with the clubhouse about your guys' expectations for yourselves?
You know, a lot of us played together, you know, coming up through the minors and double A and triple A and even single A. So the clubhouse has been relatively light. We got a few veterans, you know, Seager, Marco, Tom Murphy, and Mitch, and all those guys at Paxton, too. It's been super light. You know, we want to go out and play good baseball. I think in the beginning it was kind of a little tight. We were kind of a little stressed out about what could happen, how the team could shake out. But as it progressed, the clubhouse feeling just got super light, relaxed, and we started playing some really good baseball at the end of spring there. So I think we take that into the season. It's going to be a really good season. I'm excited to see what tonight has in store.
Yeah, we're really excited, too. I want to jump back to kind of that mindset. I know that you and Jake were talking about it for just 1 second. But, Anthony, few people in the entire world are talented enough to be able to do what you guys do. Like, few people ever get to the bigs. Pitching is impossibly difficult. What's it like, the first thing that comes to your mind when you walk out onto the mound?
Just trying to keep a clear mindset. Really, I tell myself, control my breathing, you know, attack the hitters. Stay aggressive, and it's not trying to overwhelm yourself. You know, you want to go pitch by pitch and kind of methodically think about it, but you have to do it within, you know, the window of 15 seconds. But as soon as I get out there, I just want to attack these guys. You know, I have pretty intense emotions when I'm out there, but I try and conceal them as best I can, obviously, in certain situations. But I just have intense, so I just want to attack these guys and just keep going at them no matter what. I know my stuff's better than theirs, so there it is.
I love that.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Now, Anthony, you know, one last thing. I mean, you've kind of made this transition, and you know, obviously it's ever-evolving and it can change on a dime, but, you know, kind of made this transition into the bullpen. And what was that like for you initially? Was that a hard transition emotionally, or was it something that you were able to, you know, quickly go, okay, here's my role now and I'm just going to own it? What was that process like for you?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, this is my role now, and I have to own it. This is going to be my ticket to the big leagues and a ticket to stay there, obviously. So I thought it was probably one of the easiest things I could have done. I was waiting for the call when Jerry could tell me I could move to the bullpen finally. You know, I've been plotting it for years. Being a starter is probably one of the hardest things you can do in this league. So
yeah.
Going out for 1 to 2 innings and, you know, clean up an inning is probably the best thing that could have happened to me in my career.
Now, I just want to throw in, I know we started with March Madness, and you sound like you're a fan. I want to at least jump back into it, because between Houston and Baylor facing off and UCLA and the Zags, who do you have winning it all?
I got Zags. I know Marco went there, and I actually went to my buddy that I stayed with in spring training went there, so I got to pick the Zags. They're playing really good basketball after the game I watched, so they can just run up and down the floor like nothing.
It's unreal.
Okay. All right, Marco has converted you, huh? So okay, all right.
He's brought some energy with it, so I'll converge with him.
I love it. Supportive teammate right there, Anthony. You know, I loved interviewing you and loved having the chance to talk with you, and going to be rooting hard for you. You know how this season progresses and how it unfolds for you and the rest of the team. You know, we'll be anxious and pulling right there with you. But you know, one last thing that I want to ask you is, you know, you've gone through this process of a COVID year, you know, kind of going through that transition and all of that. What have you felt like you've been able to get yourself ready to go now with a full spring training? Does everything feel like it's getting somewhat back to normal?
Yeah, I think the way spring training went, I thought it went really smoothly for us on Seattle side, at least. I think with, you know, the vaccine being more available for guys, certain guys, and once they kind of relax the, you know, the restrictions, I think it's going to be a good year. It should be like a normal year, hopefully, with, you know, other states abiding by what they want to do with COVID. But it's, I think it should be a great year. It should be a full 162, no problem. Playoffs should be awesome.
He is Anthony Misevich, one of your Seattle Mariners. Anthony, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us. Jake and I loved having
awesome.
You
Thank
on,
you
and have fun tonight.
I will. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have fun out there.
See ya. All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey, by the way, brought to you by the Pro Club. That was Mariners reliever Anthony Misevich. First of all, sounds like Marco Gonzalez converted him to the Bulldog fandom, going for the Zags in March Madness.
Yes.
Secondly, converted him to the Bulldog mindset. I very much enjoyed Anthony saying, you know what, my stuff's better than theirs. Yeah. I like that attitude.
Well, you need to have it. I mean, when you play at the highest level, you've got to think with that kind of mindset. And so I hope that for, you know, Anthony and for the team that he's able to put it all together and really own his role in the bullpen. And you know, if him and the rest of the crew in that bullpen can step up and improve from a year ago, I think that, you know, this club's sitting in a much better position. And we'll see how it goes. It obviously always shifts from year to year, and bullpens can be very unpredictable. But, you know, I think that you just kind of get a glimpse into the mindset of these professional athletes when you look at Anthony. You look at also the mindset of this team, and I love the idea and the conversation that he said, like, look, we've been together, we're a very young crew, we've been together through the minors and have grown up together, and the idea of being nervous about where you stand, right? Because that's what they've been going through over the past couple years is, all right, am I good enough to make the cut? Am I good enough in the eyes of this organization to be a part of this rebuilding process? Then we're still going through that. It's not done. It's not completely over. But I think from just hearing from him, mm-hmm. the players have taken a different perspective. Instead of being tense and nervous and out there, going out there and trying to prove yourself every second of the day and at every pitch, every at-bat, they're taking a much more relaxed mindset of knowing, like, hey, we're a talented group. We know we can get it done. And let's go out there and compete and play great baseball. I love hearing that transition. And I think it's a very honest perspective and way of looking at it, because I can only imagine how anxiety riddled you could be through this process of going, man, I don't even know if I'm going to be here, you know, in a couple months or in a year. Do they see me a part of this rebuild or not?
We've got a couple minutes left here, you guys, before we jump into four down territory. So I want to cycle back and get to the prediction that we're going to have for the season. So we all said what we're excited about. One thing we're excited about. We all said one question we have. Now it's time for our one prediction. Let's keep it to the opening series. Just to make it specific, opening series.
Okay, opening series.
Opening series.
Mine is just about today.
Oh, wow. Okay? You went super specific.
Yeah.
Opening night.
I mean, come on, Stacey, it's me.
Of course, I'm going to get
super specific. Yep. But, you know, look, there's been a lot of questions about Evan White. And can this guy be great at the plate? And can he take that next step? We all know how powerful he is. And guess what? He is going to put that power on display tonight. He is going to not only hit a home run, he is going to hit a bomb. He is going to hit a bomb either deep into center, or he's going to hit it into the upper deck in right or left field. I think he absolutely mashes one tonight.
Okay. That's exciting. Love opening night home run. I'm going to go with, I'm going to say Marco has a great night. Strikes out. Oh gosh. What would I consider great? I'm pretty fair. Strikes out six or seven.
I think anything above eight. Eight and up is a really good night.
I need to overshoot. Okay, fine. Yeah. Strikes out eight.
We're talking
there
about predictions. Come on.
I know.
Yeah, we're not talking about save. Is
I
this
think
Bull
that's
Take
a,
Thursday?
I think that's a decent night. Okay, fine. Marco Gonzalez strikes out nine.
Whoa.
Okay.
Oh,
now that's Bull. I like that.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay, Curtis.
My prediction. Now, Jake, there's a certain standard a player has to meet before they become one of your guys, and I think this guy is already there, and we've only seen him for a half season in a Mariners uniform, and that's Ty France. I would put him safely in one of your guys' camps.
Yes, he is 100% in my camp.
Yeah,
I am all about Ty France.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Jake type. Opposite of Troy Aikman. Is Ty France.
Inside the Jake Heaps lab of where
what,
he makes
you know
his
realm
dream
he is,
players.
You know what realm he's entered into? He's entered into the Jacob Hollister realm.
Oh, no.
Ty
oh.
France is
Wakes
my
up in
new
the morning,
Jacob Hollister.
Wow. Crushes a Mountain Dew energy drink and gets to work.
Let's go.
With that being said, I think Jake's guy, Ty France, you got to start up. Jake's guy, really good hitter, Ty France, has a multi-home run game against the Giants in this home series. Yeah. Ty France going yard twice in one of these games. Is it tonight?
Okay.
Maybe.
Now,
tomorrow? Could be.
The question
Saturday?
Is
Saturday? Maybe.
Do we continue to call him Ty he can really hit France, or Ty, Jake's guy, Ty, France.
Or Jake's guy, Ty, he can really hit France. There's a lot of nicknames to be added here.
That's a lot. But I think I'm going to go with that. Jake's guy, Ty, he can really hit France.
There we go.
All right, let's tell Rick Riz.
Let's do it.
Let's let him know. All right, it's 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Jake, hate to bring you down after that, but it looks like you still can't get over this Jaron Reed situation with the Seahawks and Chiefs. What bothers you about it?
Yeah, you are bringing me down
now.
I was enjoying that Ty France conversation. But look, the reason why I can't get over this is because Jaron Reed, his approach, his mindset to this just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I think it's just bad way of negotiating. I think it's a bad way of financially looking after yourself and your future. And I want to go to cut number 12 here. Mike Garofalo kind of explaining this a little bit more on Good Morning Football, and just saying that he was willing to give up the money. He felt like he was disrespected.
The Seahawks kept it real with him, and Jaron Reed said, "You know what? If that's the case, then I'm just going to go elsewhere." Now, some people question: did he know he was giving up money? Yes, he did. His agent explained it to him fully and said, "You are going to lose millions of dollars here." He said, "I don't care. I don't care because I want to go to a place where I feel the love back to instead of some other people, Mike Rob, okay?" And so he willingly gave up millions of dollars to go to the Chiefs to play there.
You gave up money that the team was willing to give you, upfront cash, and they didn't respect you? They gave you a two-year extension, and they gave you a $13.5 million deal for 2 years, a top market deal that you had when you initially hit the market. Like, this one doesn't make any sense to me when it comes to Jaron Reed whatsoever. I really don't get it. Now, did he go to a good team? Did he go to a good situation? Yeah, he did. I think that he's in a situation where he could probably produce some good numbers and get back out on the market next year. But to act like the Seahawks disrespected him in this circumstance really doesn't make much sense to me. And it really makes me believe that, oh, look, every athlete and every player at that level thinks that they're the greatest. But it really shines a light as to the over-evaluation of Jaron Reed and where he thinks he is in regards to the NFL greats and defensive tackles in the NFL. Because Jaron Reed is not a guy that you're going to sign to a 3-4 year extension and give him a top market, high level contract. What the Seahawks have done and what they continue to do was show respect to him, their former second round pick, and wanted to put more upfront money in his pocket. And he said, "No, that's disrespectful." So this one, I still won't get over it.
Second down. Stacy, a two-parter for
you. Okay.
Which color hydroplane wins the hydro race tonight? Keep in mind, yellow is the 710 boat.
Yeah,
and also, do the Seahawks have enough on the interior of the defensive line without Jaron Reed?
Two equally good questions, equally sports-related questions, and I love both of them. I'm going to answer the most difficult one first, which is the hydroplane race. I think it is going to be yellow. Look, I'm biased. I know yellow is the 710 ESPN Seattle hydro, but I'm telling you right now, everyone's excited. It's bright. It's sunny. You got a few clouds, but I can see blue sky. I'm just really feeling it tonight. I'm feeling the yellow hydroplane winning. I almost took green. I thought about it, and then I thought, no, this feels right in my soul.
You're a company gal.
Toe of the company line. But also, it feels right. It feels right. Let's go yellow tonight. All right. And for the second one, I know that the interior of the defensive line isn't one of the first places that most fans are like fascinated by. It's not a flashy receiver. It's not your star running back. It's not your edge guy. But there's some interesting stories happening there this year. And I am nervous about how the loss of Jaron Reed impacts that line. Say what you will about him, he was a solid, solid veteran for them, a solid starter and an impact player. I'm excited to see Puna Ford return. They got that right. And one of the more interesting stories you're going to be watching, and why right now I'm leaning yes, is moving LJ Collier on the interior, having Kerry Hyder as your five tech where LJ Collier was playing, and then moving LJ Collier inside. It's kind of interesting for fans to see, you know, can they get the most out of this former first round pick in this role?
They're down. Jake, we're about 4 weeks away from the NFL draft, and in that time, do you expect the Seahawks to make any significant additions via free agency?
I really think that they're going to stand pat at this point in time. Now, unless Quentin Dunbar's market really starts to get hot and heavy and they feel like they can get him at a reasonable price point and they want to lock him in, that would be the only player that I would see them actually signing before the draft. But right now, with where the market currently is, it's really favorable to them at the three positions that I think that they still can add to, which is defensive tackle, receiver number three, and a corner. Those three positions. Now, you can look at interior offensive line as well, but I don't think that you'll address that position unless you get into the draft. But all three of those positions, I don't think there's going to be a rush, because you want to, as the rest of the 32 teams, go into the draft, see what everybody gets, see what everybody is able to land, and then you can dip back into the free agency market after the draft, after June 1st, when there's anticipated to be more cuts to be made to NFL rosters. So I think that the Seahawks are going to stay, they're going to stand pat before the draft when it comes to additional free agent acquisitions, at least significant free agent acquisitions.
Fourth down. Jake, given the outlook of the current roster, could you see the Seahawks standing pat and using pick number 56 in the second round?
I know people will look at this comment and they'll kind of roll their eyes and be like, Jake, how could you be so naive? John Schneider is going to, without question, he's going to trade down. But let me give you a scenario where I think that there is a legit chance that they could take the 56th overall pick in this draft. How many holes do they have? How many glaring holes do they have on this current roster? Unless you're taking, let's say, for example, a project, a left tackle prospect that could eventually replace Dwayne Brown if you felt like that was necessary. Outside of those types of situations, the immediate needs are not high. You really have three positions right now that you're looking to address. And I think that you can do it adequately with the remaining free agents that are out there. And if you have somebody that is very talented, that can make an impact, that can play for you in your estimation right away at that third receiver position, at the center position, at the cornerback position, and there are some unique prospects out there, I think it's worth holding on to that. Not go for volume and go for quality and take a player that you think can really make a difference for you and compete and contribute early on. So I do think that there is an opportunity there, or a world where John Schneider and the Seahawks look at what they have at 56 and what slid down to them and make that selection and not trade down and go for volume.
Now, we've got some fun things coming up later in the show. First of all, it is the debut of the Scott Service Show. Normally, it will be on Tuesdays, but because it's opening day, opening night for the Mariners, the skipper made an exception for you guys. Going to join us coming up at the top of the hour, 1 p.m. Shannon Dreyer will also join us for that. So we'll get a nice interview with Scott Service. And then at 12:45, we're going to jump back into Jake's first down about that Jaron Reed sound. So we're going to get to that first, though. We've been talking about the Mariners. We've been sticking in Seattle. We're going to take a look around the MLB very quickly for the timeline, because there is a huge new deal you guys need to know about that's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy. We're out here live at T-Mobile Park for Mariners opening day. Now, we're in the regular booth, the one that that Rick Riz, that they use, the actual broadcasters. And I stole some. I don't know if it's a heater. I'm going to assume it's Rick's heater. Rick, I'm borrowing your heater. I hope that I don't set the booth on fire. And if I do, I'm very sorry. I apologize in advance just in case that happens. Let's jump into the timeline. Legendary UNC basketball coach Roy Williams has announced his retirement.
Big shock. Legendary career for Roy Williams. But, hey, go out on your own terms. And he is someone that I think has, you know, been a treasure to basketball. I mean, he's been able to be extremely extremely great at the college level. He was great in the NBA level, and his impact on the game, I think, is far-reaching. And I don't think that Roy Williams is going to be going too far away from basketball. I think you're still going to see him around quite often.
Curtis, if you had to list what would be the most impactful retirement of a current, and this would include Williams, just say prior to this retirement, of a current NCAA hoops coach, what would be the most impactful?
It would be him or Mike Krzyzewski.
Or Coach K.
One of those two. And, well, obviously with Roy Williams hanging it up today, Mike Krzyzewski would be, you know, a game changer for that Duke program. He is the Duke program. Just as Roy Williams has become North Carolina basketball post-Dean Smith, it's going to be odd to see where North Carolina goes after this. I know they it looks like they might promote from within. Hubert Davis is a name that's been thrown out there, but anybody you bring in is not going to be close to the resume that Roy Williams has built up over his, what, 33-year head coaching career. And it's not just the success he had in North Carolina. He helped build that Kansas program into what it became, too. Didn't win a national championship at KU, but got them to a couple of national title games and just really, you know, just a mainstay at two blue blood programs. Very few can match what he's accomplished in the game of college basketball.
Right. And, you know, you look at, you talk about those two blue blood programs. It's not easy to be able to transition from one group to the next. It's not, you know, you see it all the time where one's person's success and setup doesn't necessarily translate to the other. And Roy Williams seemed to have that larger-than-life type of personality, that larger-than-life fatherly figure type of recruiting, where that was able to translate at North Carolina. And so I think that when you look at Roy Williams, he leaves a tremendous legacy, unbelievable amount of winning that took place for him at the college level. And as you said, Curtis, it is going to be nearly impossible to replace that figure, that presence, for the Tar Heels, but they're going to find a way to get it done, and they might promote within, but I would have to imagine that is easily, without a doubt, the most coveted and would always be one of the most coveted
1,000%
head coaching vacancies in all of college basketball.
Curtis, you applying?
Yeah, I got my cover letter in this morning. Three references. I used you for one of them, Stacey.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be able to for sure help them, depending on how the rest of the day goes, Curtis.
Oh, wow.
Are we
going
to have more April Fool's jokes?
Well, I'm hoping to meet Brian, and hopefully that's not a big April
Next
Fool's
story,
joke.
Next story, jumping to the MLB. Shortstop Francisco Lindor and the Mets have reached an agreement on a 10-year, $341 million extension. That from a ton of sources. ESPN's Jeff Passan, MLB Network's John Heyman, also Taiwan Walker just tweeted it out, which is fantastic. Now, flashes to Russell Wilson's deadline here, because Lindor had set an artificial deadline of opening day. As recently as Saturday, there were reports that Lindor and new Mets owner Steve Cohen had met for dinner, but that the two sides could still be really far apart, because the Mets were willing to do $325 million, and Lindor reportedly wanted a lot closer to $385.
And he also wanted two extra years.
And they end up meeting somewhere in the middle. Jeff Passan does the no brag, but I guess 340, which
That'll
is 1 million off. Now, it's the first big deal under Steve Cohen, that new billionaire Mets owner. As a reminder, Francisco Lindor traded to the Mets in January. They're part of their exciting efforts to build up their program. Everything they're doing is very kind of public, forward-facing. Like, Steve Cohen feels like a guy that's very much, and maybe it's because it's New York, feels very much like a guy that's like, this is what we're doing, here's what we're going to do. Like, very public about trying to be like, I know where you've been, Mets fans, but no longer. We're going to be better here.
Well,
in the last,
but that
years,
was one of those moments where maybe, hey, look, you're promising a change and a sign of change, but then you screw it up, right? And you let a generational talent like Lindor walk. And I know that out of everything, that this crushed Curtis Rogers' dreams of Lindor being a Seattle Mariner.
He's not going to be a Seattle Mariner. There are also
That's easy to say now.
There are also a ton of other shortstops that could be available.
Yeah, but
they're going to be crazy expensive.
Is there any quite like him? Yeah, I know. They're going to have to dip well within to that bank account.
Now, would you rather have brought in Lindor, generational talent at shortstop, or go out and get pitching next offseason? spend a ton of money on pitching.
I think Francisco Lindor is more of a sure bet than any pitcher.
I was trying to get you to question it, but you're
plus the Mariners have some young arms along the, or coming up here. Logan Gilbert, Emerson Hancock, Kirby. George Kirby. There's plenty of guys. They also have the number 12 pick in this year's draft. Pitching is on the way. Is there a generational shortstop that can switch hit and is as marketable as Francisco Lindor is? If you get somebody like that in, on your team, you can make back that money that you're paying
now,
him.
Now, who won this negotiation? Because in my mind, this is Lindor all the way. I mean, he didn't get the 12 years that he wanted, but why did he want 12 years? It's because of the end goal of that money, and eventually the Mets ended up caving into giving him more money than they originally wanted to, just to keep and maintain those 10-year, that 10-year window that they were so stuck on.
You know who won? It's not the Mets or Lindor. It's the other shortstops that are looking at this deal going, Corey Seager going, let's go. Pay
Trevor
Lindor.
Story, exactly. Bobby Baez.
That's who won this morning. That's who went to bed last night feeling good.
I thought it was interesting that Lindor settled on $341 million, which is $1 million more than what Fernando Tatis Jr. made. That's petty, and I love it.
Does Tatis have deferrals the same way? Because the one thing that I love about baseball contracts, the deferrals, the idea that Lindor will get $5 million a year until 2041 when we're all turned into dust.
Well, speak for yourself, Stacey. I mean,
you're older than us.
Okay, Curtis, I cannot stress
we'll
this enough.
Thriving.
You'll be 30
we'll be heading
years
into
old
our prime
in a
years.
Week. Curtis is 30 in a week, you guys.
Still 29.
It feels good.
Driver's license
are the best.
Says 29. Birth certificate says 29.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up next, we have Scott Servais joining us at the top of the hour. Before we get into any of that, though, we're going to jump back into Jake. You know what I want?
Of course
I
want, you do. Of course you want to jump
Curtis,
back into
I forgot.
This.
Do you have the nickname that someone sent in for Ty France?
Oh,
because
man.
We had a new suggestion. This I want to make sure we get to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, from the 425.
Okay.
Just an incredible
better
nickname.
Nickname for Ty France.
We were adding we on go. To what Shannon's nickname for Ty France was.
Combining
this one,
it with Jake's guy, Ty, he can really hit France.
This is from the 425. They say Jake's guy. Ty Stromborn of the House Targaryen, first of his name, the unburnt king of the Andals and the First Men, call of the great grass sea, breaker of chains, father of dragons, he can really hit France.
You know what? You know what? I still don't think that adequately describes him. I think that there's a few more that we should probably add to that.
Does that say 300 average to you? I don't think it does. I think it needs more. All right. So, again, Jake was having a great day. We're going to jump back into that Jaron Reed sound, though. I want to get you fired up, Jake. Let's go. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Our coverage of opening day is presented by American Prodigy, The Kid, the Ken Griffey Jr. story. Taylor, you don't have a mic. You have to do a thumbs up. Did you listen to the first season of American Prodigy? They have one season that dropped. I subscribed. I'm very excited to listen.
I believe the first season was on Freddie Adu.
It was, yes.
The soccer prodigy.
I'm going to cycle back and listen to that just to get the vibe of the pod. And then, obviously, all of us, Tay giving the thumbs up, are going to go listen to the Ken Griffey Jr. story again. That is American Prodigy. Go subscribe. Review, rate, subscribe. Jake, you in your first down talked about Jaron Reed's sound a bit. I want to jump back into it, though. Now, we're doing primarily Mariner stuff today. It's opening day. We're all very excited. But we do have some Seahawks news, and that was from Mike Garofalo, kind of giving his side of the story, or rather Jaron Reed's side of the story, with, I'm going to call it the decision to move on, I guess, for both parties with the Seahawks and Reed. So let's first jump to that sound and play it for you right here.
Jaron Reed officially signed with the Chiefs yesterday, the defensive lineman, for $5 million guaranteed, can earn up to $2 million more. That is going to be short, no matter what, of what he would have made in Seattle on a restructure. Now, I know this has been talked about. I just want to double back to make everything crystal clear.
So he would have made that in Seattle?
He would have made more than that in Seattle. He would have made over $8 million per year as part of these restructures that we're seeing, which is they take your what you're owed in non-guaranteed money and they make it guaranteed, give you a large signing bonus that helps spread it out with the cap. Huh. Jaron Reed said, no, I want a new long-term extension. The Seahawks said, look, we're not going to do it.
Now, Jake, before you dive into this, let me give a quick background just so everyone is kind of caught up. So everyone knows that Jaron Reed is no longer with the Seahawks. He was released rather than traded. It sounds like Seattle couldn't find a trade partner. So Jaron Reed had around $14 million cap hit in 2020. This or 2021, excuse me. So according to Ian Rappaport, the Seahawks went up to Jaron Reed and said, hey, we need to create some cap room, some cap flexibility. We don't have a lot. Can we move some money around? And typically what that means, it's not that a player gets less money. It means that, a number of things, but one option could be you give him an upfront signing bonus and then create voidable years or use something to kind of spread the money around so that that hit that you have that year isn't 14. Right. It's something more like 5 or 6 or 7. Yeah. And so Jaron Reed reportedly said, no, actually, I don't want to restructure. I want an extension. I want to stay here, and I want the knowledge that I'm going to be with this team. I don't want to do a favor and then hit free agency. I want to lock things up. Two sides couldn't come to an agreement, and so they part ways. That's the background.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that the team is looking at this and going, hey, look, when we initially gave you this deal, a two-year deal, it was with the thought and the idea that, hey, we're going to give you a two-year contract. We're going to pay you very good, significant money. For your market, and you're going to be able to hit free agency in 2 years. You're going to be able to get back into the market yet again. And I think from Jaron Reed's perspective, it's either you believe in me or you don't. And you're either willing to give me that extension or you don't want me to be here. And the team's going, well, yeah, but you're going to get $8 million out of this. You're going to get all the money that you were owed this season, instead of having to play, 17 games to see that money, you're going to get that money up front from the get-go with a signing bonus. That's a pretty good win, and you're going to hit the open market the following year. Jaron Reed took that as a great sign of disrespect, no longer wanted to be on the team, and ended up taking a $3 million pay cut just because he was not happy with the way the team handled it, not happy that he didn't get the extension. And to me, this is one of the more bizarre situations. If you wanted to go out, and someone texted this, well, okay, he lands with the Kansas City Chiefs, he lands in a pretty good situation for himself. Why should you hate on him? Well, I'm not hating on him getting out in the open market and signing with a good team. I'm hating on the idea that the team somehow disrespected him in this process. They did not. They stayed true to their word, and who knew? Who knows? Maybe they would have re-signed him after the season's end, but they weren't willing to give that extension now. So I just think it's one of the more bizarre situations I have ever seen in a player feigning that the team was disrespectful to him, when I don't read that situation that way at all.
I don't read it as them being disrespectful, but I do see valid points to his argument in that you may not be saying, I don't believe in you, and you gave me a huge deal, a huge two-year deal. What was it? $22 million, $11 million a year or so. I'm making 8.5 this year. That's respectful, right? That's you're investing in me, or rather you have invested in me. But if I say, hey, I'm Jaron Reed, I'm 27 years old, and I want to know I can stay here, and you say no, that inadvertently tells me that you don't believe in me, or that inadvertently tells me that you think that you could have something down the road. And you may, Jake, say, no, it doesn't. This is about money. This is about making room in an unprecedented year when the salary cap is 20-something million dollars lower than we thought it would be. But I think from the point of view of a player,
yes,
when you don't invest in me and when you don't lock me up for years to come down the road, you're doing so for a reason. Because if you thought I was too good to hit free agency, you would have done it.
I just think it's such an odd situation. So you're going to get that mad that you're going to take $3 million less? Like, I don't understand that. And so if you feel like you want to walk away from that situation, fine. Good on you. I wish the best for you in the future, and definitely not when you play the Seahawks in the future.
Well,
I just think it's one of those situations where the team was not disrespectful to Jaron Reed in the situation. They're trying to make the most of a bad situation given the cap. And they were giving the player the signing bonus right from the get-go. They weren't asking the player to take a pay cut. And that, to me, is when it is disrespectful. It's not the fact that they weren't willing to sign up for a long-term extension at this point in time. I think it's very much within reason. And I get that sometimes players are illogical in terms of looking at this from their own selfish point of view and wanting that long-term extension, wanting that financial commitment, and knowing the organization thinks that they're worthy of that in that moment. But this is business, and you're still, Jaron Reed, going to be on the open market the following year. The Kansas City Chiefs are not going to be signing Jaron Reed to a long-term big mega deal. They simply can't do it on their cap. So he is just going to be a one-year rental this year for the Chiefs, and they're hoping that they can make the most of it.
All right, so we have the very, very first Scott Service show here on Jake and Stacey coming up in less than 10 minutes. Shannon Dreher, Mariners insider of 710 ESPN Seattle, is going to be joining us. So the three of us are going to talk to the skipper. Curtis, I will do my best not to include any kind of April Fool's jokes at all.
Please,
I know this is a very serious, very serious opening day segment. I will keep it cool. I will keep it profesh, and it'll be fine. We're going to have a great interview with Scott.
Okay.
I am going to start.
Gonna hold
every,
you to it.
I'm going to start every question by saying, "Hey, Skip."
Yeah, there you go. Just make him feel right at home,
I
right
think
in the clubhouse.
So. He'll have a great time. I think Scott Service is going to have a great time. He joins us next.